Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I hope you're doing well today. Welcome into one of those ubiquitous filler days that gets no respect in the American language. For some reason, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they get all the attention. Tuesday and Thursday, they sit out on the back porch and mope. Well, welcome to Tuesday. Hopefully you've got a good one lined up. Things are looking good for you, and that all is well with you and yours. Thanks a lot for being here. I appreciate you joining the gang on Facebook Live or via podcast, whichever way you've decided to tune in today. Thanks a lot for doing so. It is a crazy day in the neighborhood. I've been looking through the notes for today's show, putting the newsletter together, getting all of that lined up, and there is so much to talk about and just not enough time. That's just every day now, isn't it? A lot to talk about and not enough time. But to start with, congrats to SpaceX, because SpaceX had a semi-successful launch yesterday, a large and difficult launch. Elon Musk said this one was going to be a tough one, and he was right. Although they had great success in that they did something they've never done before, and that is that they captured the nose cone of the SpaceX rocket with a net at sea. Stop and think about that for a moment. They've got a big boat out in the middle of the ocean. It's got a net, and they caught part of a rocket as it fell from space in a net in the ocean. Yeah, the nose cone. First time they've done that. A giant net-wielding boat. Just absolutely amazing. They actually caught it. Now, that is the good part. Aside from the fact that the launch was successful, they deployed the satellites that they intended to deploy, that all of that went well, but they lost a section of the rocket. The main center section of the rocket actually did attempt landing on the barge at sea, and it fell into the ocean, and it was lost. The other side boosters, you know, those little external boosters that fall away, they landed successfully on the ground in Florida, but when it came to the big center section of the main section of the rocket, it did attempt a landing on the barge, and the barge clamps couldn't hold it, and it fell. And SpaceX lost that. But they knew going in this was going to be difficult. They were doing some things that they hadn't done before. The net, for example. And it was going to be a tough shot, and it proved to be true. And also, as has proven to be true with SpaceX in the past, when they have lost something, they've made mistakes, it doesn't tend to happen very often after that. They tend to correct and get things right. So I have a feeling the next time they send up a big one, they're going to get it all correct. It's just amazing. And this is just more proof that you can't trust stuff like this to government. Give it to the private sector. The private sector will succeed. So a tip of the hat to SpaceX. Good for you, folks. You did a great job. A great job. Wow. What else have we got to talk about today? Joe Biden is in the news. Bernie Sanders, of course, is in the news. Crazy Maxine Waters is in the news. Trey Gowdy says he has seen some mysterious evidence that changed his perspective on the Mueller investigation. We'll take a look at that, hopefully, as time, if time allows. And the House Democrats are spreading lies about climate change and hurricanes. This is coming from a scientist. I hope we have a chance to get to this particular story because it's important to know. But before we move forward on the topic of climate change, just a quick note. If we're causing climate change, if man is impacting climate change, how are we managing to pull this off on Mars? Because the same thing is happening on Mars right now. Science is measuring increases in temperatures on Mars, that the polar ice on Mars is melting. Scientists are measuring this. The same kind of natural activity, which is happening on Earth, is happening on Mars. I just want to know, when we started building automobiles and burning coal on the planet Mars. When did we start polluting the atmosphere there to make it happen? Oh, that's right, we didn't. All we've done is land a few probes on Mars that have rambled around and taken a few soil samples and shot some pictures and some video. That's all we've done. And none of those were powered by anything that burned carbon fuels. So, no. What's happening is that the sun is heating up Mars. It's solar activity, the same as is happening here on Earth. It's solar activity. And yet, most people just believe what they're told by the evening news and politicians who are empowered by the panic created by the evening news, because that panic generates donations, and those donations help keep them campaigning and staying in office, making the big money. This is what's happening. The politicians, the leftist politicians, are lying to us because those lies generate money. Please don't be deceived. The bottom line is always the bottom line. Now, let's shift gears and talk about creepy Uncle Joe. I want to pass along the contents of an article to you, but I'm not going to tell you where the article comes from until the end. And that's important, and you'll understand why. Here we go. The first time Joe Biden ran for president was in 1988, sort of. Biden officially withdrew from that contest in September of 1987 after just 3.5 months as a declared candidate. Despite building what the New York Times called a formidable core of fundraisers, Biden spent his brief time on the campaign trail bumbling from unforced error to unforced error. He insulted voters face to face, telling one, "I think I probably have a much higher IQ than you." Whew. He lied about his academic record, lied about marching in the civil rights movement, and plagiarized Bobby Kennedy, Hubert Humphrey, and the British politician Neil Kinnock. Biden's first presidential flameout was shocking. He was a 14-year Senate veteran, chairman of the powerful Judiciary Committee, and the favored candidate of a deep bench of deep-pocketed donors. 2 decades later, Biden tried again. Now, with 34 years of experience in the Senate, he opened his campaign with an unintentionally racist gaffe, complimenting then-Senator Barack Obama, the Democrat from Illinois, as articulate and clean. The second time around, he made it to the actual year of the election, but withdrew after failing to win a single percentage point of the vote in the Iowa caucuses. In 2019, it is no longer a surprise that Biden is running yet another bad presidential campaign. What's stunning is the insistence from the Democrat Party's leadership that Biden is their best bet for defeating Donald Trump. His latest dreadful week on the campaign trail is a case in point. At a fundraiser on Tuesday night, Biden wistfully recalled his working relationships with segregationist Senators James Eastland of Mississippi and Herman Talmadge of Georgia. Other 2020 candidates, including Senators Cory Booker and Bernie Sanders, called on Biden to apologize, while House Speaker Nancy Pelosi found herself defending Biden's rhetoric as part of his authentic persona. But the story has continued to dominate the news cycle, because Biden has been authentically agreeing with segregationists on a host of racial justice issues over the course of his career in Washington. In September of 1986, Biden boasted of his relationship with segregationist Strom Thurmond from the Senate floor, saying the two men had worked tirelessly together to reform the criminal justice system. Quote, "We agreed upon 90% of the changes that had to take place, probably 95%, and they were striking changes in the sentencing law, striking changes in parole, striking changes in terms of how we define certain crimes, striking changes in terms of certain penalties." Those changes included many policies that fueled the mass incarceration of black men in the United States, including wildly disparate sentencing for powder versus crack cocaine. Biden's cooperation with segregationists included work with Senator Jesse Helms in the 1970s as part of an effort to halt the racial integration of public schools. Biden did not bring up the good old days with the good old boys in response to tough questioning from his lefty critics. He presented it all by himself, apropos of nothing. Presidential campaigns make mistakes, but Biden's campaign doesn't seem to do anything else. Community leaders in Charlottesville, Virginia, were angered that Biden used their town as a prop in his campaign launch video. When Biden's advisors told reporters he would pursue a middle ground on climate change policy, his campaign attacked the publication that accurately reported their remarks, then rushed to release a climate change policy platform plagiarized from activists and think tanks. The campaign then said its failure to cite outside organizations was an accident. Biden skips major Democratic Party events, appears to be hiding from the press, and is doing very little actual campaigning. His rivals for the Democratic nomination are holding double to quadruple the number of public events. Not all of these missteps mean much to voters, but something clearly isn't sitting right. After debuting at 41% in the wake of his April 25th announcement, Biden's share of the primary electorate has slipped a full 10% in just 6 weeks. And that was before the segregationist debacle. Most of Biden's critics attack him for ideological reasons. They don't agree with his ideas about economic policy, social justice, or foreign policy. They want to see the party nominate a candidate who fits the liberal inclinations of the modern Democratic electorate, not a guy who longs for the lost golden age of the 1980s. But there's a much simpler problem with his candidacy. Biden just isn't very good at politics. The Democratic donor class doesn't need Biden. There are plenty of establishment Democrats out there capable of maintaining the present balance of power within the party, in which progressives get to complain and self-described moderates actually exercise power. Many of them are even running for president. But for some reason, Democratic Party leadership continues to insist that Biden must be their man. Now I'm going to tell you where this article is printed. It's the Huffington Post. HuffPost.com. Huffington Post. Not a trusted conservative source. The Huffington Post. The last paragraph of the article, which I didn't read, is anti-Trump. The last paragraph. It's three sentences. There's no need to read it because it's just their observations from a leftist perspective. But at the same time, their leftist perspective is that Joe Biden is bad at politics. Joe Biden is bad at what he's doing. This is coming from the leftist heart of the media, the Huffington Post. This is the publication your friends quote back to you when they try to make points about how wrong you are. The Huffington Post says Joe Biden is bad at what he does. What does this mean? It means that the left is doing everything they can to torpedo Joe Biden because they do not want Joe Biden to be the next president of the United States. They don't want Joe Biden to be their nominee. They don't want him to be their candidate. They want somebody who is a hard leftist, who represents their social justice values. They want someone who is more aligned with their true heartbeat, and that is socialism. They want someone who is even more out of step with American values than Joe Biden to be their candidate. When Joe announced his candidacy, I said he wouldn't make it for a long time. That he was either going to screw it up or that he would get torpedoed. Both things are happening. He is gaffing his way right out of this race. And the people on the left are looking at his values, and they're painting a very negative picture of him. They're saying he's too old. They're saying he's out of touch. They're saying he's stuck in the 80s. They're saying all kinds of negative things about him. Because they don't want this guy to be their candidate. Because they want somebody even more loony than creepy Uncle Joe to be their candidate for President of the United States. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Thanks for being part of the show today. I appreciate it. You know, Joe Biden, bless his heart, creepy Uncle Joe. I think from the beginning, everybody raised an eyebrow and said, him? Seriously? And now we're beginning to understand why. And as I've said this so many times, and I'll have to say it again right now, and that is that it's becoming obvious why the Obama administration kept Joe Biden behind closed doors. They kept the man under wraps for all that time. But every time he stepped out and did anything in front of cameras, he embarrassed them. So now we see why. He's running for president again, and he's failing again. And he's... I'm just going to say it. The man's incompetent. And he's an incompetent who has been in government for decades. For decades. And if we don't take anything else away from this, we should learn this one lesson. And that is that just because these people look good on the campaign trail when they're running for re-election or running for election in the first place, it doesn't mean they're actually capable of doing the job. I would dare say that the vast majority of people who are working in Washington, D.C., representing the people of their states right now, are incompetent. That if they didn't have staffs of competent people underneath them working to prep their material, they would be flaming failures. Because they have the power of personality. They're able to persuade people. They're very good at shaking hands and smiling and putting people at ease. But that's about the extent of their ability. Because time and time and time again, we see these people step up in front of the camera, open their mouths, and remove all doubt about how idiotic they actually are. It happens again and again. Maxine Waters is a prime example. We'll talk about Maxine here in a few minutes, but she's just one example. Pocahontas, she's another example. God love her. And then Joe Biden. Yikes. Well, Joe, in spite of the fact that torpedoes are making their way under the surface towards the hull of his ship, is still campaigning. And yesterday, he wrote in a newspaper op-ed that one of the first things he would do if he were elected would continue, it would be to continue former President Obama's efforts in granting citizenship to more than 800,000 dreamers. This is coming to us from Chicks on the Right. By the way, if you haven't watched or listened to Chicks on the Right, you really should, because they're a hoot. They really are a hoot. ABC News reports that Biden, in this op-ed, blasted Trump's handling of the immigration crisis happening at the southern border. The former vice president called Trump's actions as an assault on the dignity of immigrants designed to scare voters. Quote, Trump repeatedly invokes racist invective to describe anyone south of the Rio Grande. And he claims that he's committing actions that subvert our American values and our ability to lead on the global stage. By the way, both of those statements are lies. He plays the race card, racism, because he knows, and his people know, those who write his material, they know that racism is ugly and nasty and people hate it. And so when you accuse someone of racism, you immediately draw negative emotion towards them. And this is why these people keep referring to Trump as a racist. He actually hasn't said anything racist. He's just told the truth about our border situation. And they're using the racist label to paint a negative image of him. Also from ABC News, Biden, who launched his 2020 campaign in April, calls for streamlining the asylum system for migrants and spending more on electronic security at borders instead of building Trump's proposed U.S.-Mexico border wall. And he blasts Trump's latest threats of mass deportation and his decision to cut aid to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, three Central American nations that are sources of the increasing wave of migrants to the U.S. border. Trump, a Republican, maintains that his immigration policies are necessary to keep the country safe. He has also made clear that his 2020 re-election strategy is focused squarely on his base, which since his 2015 campaign launch has embraced his hardline nationalism and economic protectionism. Biden's op-ed is published in the Miami Herald and El Nuevo Herald, with Biden using the English and Spanish versions to praise the diversity of the surrounding city, where 20 Democratic candidates will take the debate stage in two heats Wednesday and Thursday of this week. We can go back up here to the first paragraph of this from ABC News. He talks about electronic security at the borders. Electronic security. What does that mean? Are they going to put up a Simply Safe system on the border that alerts your cell phone? Oh, people are breaking into the country again. What do they mean by that? There is no substitute for building a barrier. And if our candidates, if our people, our politicians didn't believe that, they wouldn't have walls and security around where they work. And they do. They wouldn't have walls and security around where they live. And they do. So what they're doing is expecting to live one way and then deny the nation from having the same level of protection. Why? Because it's politically expedient to whip up fear and anger. And in order to do that, they have to lie. Moving forward, more than 800,000 Dreamers were first allowed temporary legal residency when former President Obama executively enacted Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that's DACA. During his first year in office, President Trump allowed DACA to expire, and thus ended the administrative amnesty. Several legal injunctions by federal judges have since put the Dreamers in legal limbo. On January 3, 2018, a federal judge in California blocked the Trump administration's termination of DACA and continued to allow renewal requests. Similarly, on February 3, 2018, a federal judge in New York issued a preliminary injunction preventing the administration from abruptly ending the DACA program. As of June 2019, individuals with DACA or those who have had DACA in the past can continue to renew their benefits on a two-year basis. However, first-time applications are no longer being accepted. Members of Congress on both sides of the aisle then pushed their own respective DREAM Acts, which would grant these people permanent legal status, but no such bill, was ever passed. Now, Heritage says this: the unconstitutionality of Obama's actions were confirmed when Obama tried to implement a second similar program in 2014 called the Deferred Action for Parents of Americans and Lawful Permanent Residence Program, or DAPA. Like DACA, DAPA provided an administrative amnesty for illegal aliens who came to the U.S. as adults and gave them work authorizations and access to government benefits. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a nationwide injunction against DAPA, which the Supreme Court allowed to stand. As the Fifth Circuit said, the fact that the president declined to enforce the law and remove illegal aliens does not transform presence deemed unlawful by Congress into lawful presence and confer eligibility for otherwise unavailable benefits based on that change. Under our Constitution, Congress has plenary authority over immigration. The president only has the authority delegated to him by Congress, and Congress has never given the president the power to provide a pseudo-amnesty and government benefits to illegal aliens. The DACA program suffers from exactly the same constitutional infirmities as DAPA. a number of states have threatened to sue the administration and stop the DACA program. In the face of that threat, Trump really had no choice. General Sessions' legal conclusion was that DACA is vulnerable to the same legal and constitutional challenges that the courts recognized with respect to the DAPA program. Now, Joe Biden would immediately give 800,000 Dreamers American citizenship. This is what he has promised to do. Of course, this is just a play on the sympathy vote from people who don't know how this really works. He plans to immediately give 800,000, that's an almost a million Dreamers, citizenship if he's elected. And in doing so, he instantly creates 800,000 more Democrat voters. Please make no mistake that all of this about citizenship, all of this about immigration, all of it is just a political game of soccer. That's all it is. And the ball is all of those people at the border. They're being kicked back and forth, back and forth. And the people who are the most aggressive at this game are the Democrats. And they honestly do not care about these people. What they care about is getting the right imagery in the news. What they care about is showing pictures of people sleeping on the floor under aluminum foil space blankets. What they care about is negative reports. They don't care about telling the people the truth, and that is that all of the pictures they're seeing are from conditions created by the Obama administration, not the Trump administration, and that the numbers of people increasing is directly attributable to Democrats attracting more of them here. And that's what's really going on at the border. More after the break. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. So, as I ask during every podcast at about this time, have you signed up for the newsletter yet? I made it really simple. Just go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Look on the right-hand side of the page. You'll see the sign-up form there. Give me your name and your email address. You'll get an email in response just to confirm that you want to do that. And when you answer yes to the confirmation, you're on the list. You will start getting the Daily Perspective newsletter the next time it comes out. And that means if you do it before the end of the live show in the morning, you'll get the day's notes that day. If not, you'll get them the next day. So get signed up today, dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Look in the right-hand column. All right? All right. Well, not to be outdone by other 2020 Democratic presidential contenders, Bernie Sanders announced yesterday he's planning to introduce legislation to forgive the student loan debt of around 45 million Americans. This is going to cost us about $1.5 trillion if he succeeds. $1.5 trillion. That's just a drop in the bucket as far as these people are concerned. $1.5 trillion. CNBC reports that Sanders announced the plan, tentatively titled the College for All Act. Well, this guy, it's everything for all. It's like, oh yeah, it's ham sandwiches for all. It's the Ham Sandwiches for All Act. We're going to feed everybody. He announced this at a press conference early yesterday, adding that Sanders plans to pay for the massive handout with a tax on Wall Street, though Sanders and his teams revealed only a general outline of the tax plan. Don't you find it interesting that Wall Street is the boogeyman? Evil Wall Street, where all that money is changing hands? Evil Wall Street that contributes to all of their campaigns? Evil Wall Street that never comes out badly after any election? Evil Wall Street, which ends up getting more privilege every time someone campaigns against them? Don't you think that's interesting? Yeah, that should tell you something. Instead, Sanders mostly followed up on his proposal with a series of nonsensical tweets suggesting that since Congress approved other costly, objectionable government projects like the Wall Street bailout, that Congress could easily approve a racing student loan debt owed to the federal government. The plan would go on, Sanders said, to include free 2- and 4-year degrees at public colleges and universities in case any college-age student were to miss out on the opportunity to help the federal government acquire more debt. The plan also features a handful of sub-proposals that operate as separate, though associated, handouts to students. Sanders is, this particular section coming from Vox. And Vox says Sanders is proposing funding streams to states, tribes, and historically black colleges and universities to allow them to eliminate undergraduate tuition and fees. The bill would also increase spending on work-study programs and build up federal grant programs for low-income students for additional costs related to getting an education, from housing and transportation to buying books. Sanders reports this is a truly revolutionary proposal in a generation hard hit by the Wall Street crash of 2008. See, Wall Street's evil and must be punished. It forgives all student debt and ends the absurdity of sentencing an entire generation to a lifetime of debt for the crime of getting a college education. Wow. You know, I can't help but think here that the only reason a politician would venture to propose that a college education be paid for by the government would be that they would be guaranteed in some way, the politicians would be guaranteed in some way, that what the students taking advantage of this free college education would learn would all be from a leftist perspective. Because if it weren't, then the college students might actually learn real history, and the college students might actually, oh heavens, they might actually learn our Constitution. And they might actually learn the true history of our nation. And they might actually understand that politicians like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and the rest, who are proposing all kinds of freebies and government handouts to certain groups of people who they say have been abused and mistreated, there's no way on earth that these people would approve of our students, of our younger people, learning the truth about America, because if they did, they would learn that these politicians are lying to them and manipulating them and telling them everything but the truth about how our nation is supposed to work. So, of course, they want to give students a free college education. Of course they want to do this for people. Of course they do. Why? Because they know that these college students are going to learn what they want them to learn. Because that level of education in our nation is controlled by the left now. God love them. It all kind of works hand in hand. It all works hand in hand. I think it's important for us to remember that these people like Bernie Sanders, are not interested in what is best for our nation. They're interested in political solutions which have failed time and time and time again. Repeatedly. Time and time and time again. This effort by Sanders is also a strike at Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's his main competitor for the second place in the race to secure the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination. Warren's also been on a roll lately, promising chunks of money to a handful of target demographics in order to pad her support numbers. Over the weekend, she announced a handout to LGBT couples who missed out on filing joint tax returns ahead of the Obergefell decision, and has talked occasionally about reparations for slavery. Yeah, she's talking about reparations not only for slavery, but reparations for LGBT couples and that community. Last week, Warren proposed a modified forgiveness plan for former students with outstanding debt, but capped her relief check at $50,000 per student, making less than $250,000 post-grad. Sanders and his co-sponsors, Representative Ilhan Omar, oh gosh, you need to read more about what she's up to and what she has done. Odds are she's committed federal fraud. She actually should be deported from the country. And Representative Pramila Jayapal, both of them Democrats, claim that the program's $1.5 trillion price tag, that's the minimum, by the way, $1.5 trillion is the bottom, the minimum. That price tag could be paid by a new tax on financial transactions, including a 0.5% tax on stock transactions and a 0.5%, and a 0.1% tax on bonds. But critics were quick to point out, students with responsible retirement plans or even minimal stock portfolios would be hit by Sanders' plan and forced to pay for their own bailout. The plan also attacks typical IRAs and other low-risk stock-based savings plans that are supposed to help average Americans, not the super wealthy, prepare for future unexpected expenses, and sticks those most affected by the student loan debt burden with a hefty federal government debt burden. So it's not just Wall Street, you see. It's you. Because odds are, you have an IRA. You have a 401k. You have some sort of a retirement plan set up. So you will foot the bill. And this is something that the left always does and never tells you. And that is, to fund their programs, they say they're going to soak the rich. But they can't, because there's not enough money there. Their plans never tell you the truth. The truth is, and this is just a basic thing that's been put out there many times. The truth is, I know that was eloquent. It's a basic thing. This is something that's been presented many, many times, but people seem to miss it. The fact is that if you confiscate the wealth of the 1%, if you sell off all of their properties, all of their possessions, if you completely liquidate them, you still won't have enough money to fund what they want to do. You won't have enough money to run the government as it is today if you do that. If you liquidate the 1% and take everything they possess, cash it out, you can't run the government of the United States for very long. You drop down and take the top 10%, you still don't have enough. You take the top 50%, you still don't have enough. If you liquidate everything that every working American has, you take every penny from everyone in America who has anything and put it towards operating our government, it barely pays for a year. So when they tell you they're going to do this 0.5% or 0.1% tax increase on this small sliver of moneymakers, what they're telling you is a lie. Because that amount of money will not fund what they say they want to do. Because they can't pay for what they're already doing. Even if they take your money, my money, your next door neighbor's money, everybody's money in America, they can't pay for 1 year of government services. They can't do it. It's all a scam. We're deep, deep in debt to the tune of about $22 trillion. And people like Bernie Sanders and the others aren't interested in fixing that problem. They just want new shovels to keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. I do appreciate you being here today and every day. And thanks for checking in. I appreciate it a lot. It's a Tuesday edition of the podcast. We're recording this the 25th of June. And already looking forward to the weekend. I don't know about you, but I am. And it's because I spend every day looking at these stories. I spend every day scanning the news. And it just makes the weekend that much more precious to me. You know, I can just kind of unplug. And I do. I unplug as soon as I get through getting the pieces put into place on a Friday. I put everything to bed and I don't look at anything seriously unless something is just screaming for attention. I don't look at anything really seriously until sometime Sunday afternoon. And then I start scanning back through news stories to find what to talk about on a Monday morning. And because we've all got to have a break. That's why I've been saying that so much lately, that you should unplug on the weekends and that you should, like yesterday, I talked about spending some time in the quiet. Really, you should do that every day, not just on the weekends. You should every day find a little time, half an hour, an hour. If you can get an hour a day, if you can carve out an hour a day, you do it once, you'll want to do it again. And you'll find a way to carve out that time so that you're spending time unplugged from everything. No radio, no music, no nothing, just unplugged. And really come face to face with yourself and with God and face life. It's an honesty exercise I think everybody ought to do every day, every single day. Need to. And I think partly because of this looking at this stuff every day, I am more and more and more as the weeks go by. I'm thinking more and more and more about taking a cruise, about, you know, just about unplugging and getting away for a week. Just going away. And trust me, when I go in July and I have surgery and I'm in the hospital for a week, that's not what I'm talking about, because you don't rest in a hospital. Trust me, hospitals are not for resting in. If you've been in one, you know, they don't let you rest. Every couple hours, they're coming in and poking you and giving you pills and asking you questions and here, drink this. And oh, it's just nuts. When you're in a hospital, you don't rest. And it takes you a while to recover from that when you get out of the hospital. So no, that's not what I'm talking about. When I get back on my feet again, let's say September, October, November, maybe January, I would really love to just unplug for about a week and go play. Just forget everything and go play for about a week. You know what I mean? Just unplug. Maybe go visit Mickey Mouse. I don't know. All right, back to the news. Now, everybody knows the Democrats are getting more and more un-American. They're just becoming more and more anti-American. They're becoming more and more socialist and less and less inclined to deny it. Well, over at thefederalist.com, Steve Straub has an article that I think is kind of interesting. the American Democrats actually see our country as the source of most of the evil in the world. And you know what's funny to me about that particular observation is that when you really look at history, true history, you will see that if it weren't for the United States of America, millions of people alive in this world today would not be, for various reasons, for military interventions, for medical science, for various reasons, millions of people would not be alive if it weren't for the help of the United States of America. So it's while it's not surprising, it's still a bit shocking to see a Democrat member of Congress give aid and comfort to our enemies and take their side in any dispute. Senior Democratic Party leader, Representative Maxine Waters, just took the side of the Iranians in the dispute over the drone shoot down and basically echoed the propaganda of the mullahs. In a tweet, Waters wrote, quote, "Trump, you get no credit for so-called stopping the strike against Iran. Why was the unmanned drone in Iran's airspace? Why the surveillance? Don't provoke and then pretend innocence." So according to Maxine Waters, it's Trump's fault the Iranians shot down one of our drones because he provoked them. Ignore the fact the Iranian regime has basically been at war with the USA since 1979. As you might expect, Waters' comments generated some heated responses, like this one from Republican Representative Dan Crenshaw. Quote, "This is a shocking comment from a House committee chairwoman. She is literally repeating the lies of the Iranian regime. What a disgrace." Maxine Waters' hate for Trump runs so deep that she is willing to take Iran's side over the word of our military. Representative Crenshaw is 100% right. Maxine Waters' comments, that was timed badly, Maxine Waters' comments on Iran are shocking and she should be ashamed of herself. But sadly, she has no sense of shame whatsoever.
Impeach 45! Impeach 45!
Yeah.
Impeach 45!
Crazy Maxine.
Impeach 45!
Has been screaming about Donald Trump for as long as she's had any reason or imaginary reason. And God love her. Her people keep reelecting her. Maxine Waters is nuts, and she hasn't accomplished anything for her people. The district she represents is in turmoil. It's falling apart at the seams. Her people are in trouble, and she's spending her time accomplishing nothing. Absolutely nothing, except spreading hatred for people who have a different view than she does. Let's move along to somebody who's actually got a brain. And that's former Representative Trey Gowdy, Republican from South Carolina. I say former because he's retired. He said he just wasn't getting fulfillment out of what he was doing. He wasn't actually accomplishing anything. Because in D.C., you can't really accomplish anything. It's designed not to. Well, he was initially supportive of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. But over the weekend, he revealed on Fox News that his perspective shifted when he laid eyes on a mysterious piece of evidence. Gowdy told Fox News host Maria Bartiromo on Sunday Morning Futures, the evidence is FBI transcripts of conversations involving Trump campaign associate George Papadopoulos and FBI informants. He says, some of us have seen transcripts of those conversations, and I was supportive of Mueller. I was supportive of the idea to initiate, to investigate what Russia did. But when I saw this transcript, it actually changed my perspective, because you want to think of law enforcement as being unbiased and disinterested in the outcome as long as we just find the facts. This really matters. When you have exculpatory information and you don't share it with a court, then your bias begins to impact the investigation. Gowdy, who chaired the House Intelligence Committee before leaving office in January, hinted last month that the FBI intentionally withheld game-changer evidence from the FISA court when obtaining a surveillance warrant against Trump campaign associate Carter Page. It is widely believed the transcripts Gowdy referred to are exculpatory evidence. Some Republican lawmakers believe the government withheld the transcripts from the FISA court because they would have hurt the government's case for obtaining a warranty against Page. Gowdy told Bartiromo the transcripts have the potential to persuade the public in President Donald Trump's favor. He said, there is some information in these transcripts that I think has the potential to be a game changer if it's ever made public. And there is the possibility the transcripts will be made public. Attorney General William Barr is actively investigating the origins of the counterintelligence investigation into Trump's campaign, which heavily relied on the recorded conversations. It would be Barr's decision whether or not the transcripts are released, since Trump has given him the authority to declassify documents related to the investigation. And now you understand why the Democrats pitched such a fit when Trump gave William Barr that authority. Because they know what's in these transcripts. They've seen them too. They know that what's in these transcripts will reveal that the FBI withheld pertinent information. Information which would have swayed the investigation in another direction, or possibly kept it from happening in the first place. Because the Democrats aren't about justice and the rule of law. The Democrats are about winning and power and control any way they can get it. And it's time for me to get out of here. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow on the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.